This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
What's good, internet? It is April 10th.
Yeah.
2017. I'm in wacky radio voice mode now. You've lost the regular Austin Walker, and now you're going to deal with this one.
Yeah.
Welcome to the Brooklyn Morning Zoo Crew. Ah-hoo-yah. I can just do this voice. I didn't know I had this voice in me, and now it's just coming out.
This is so good. I cannot wait until Weather and Traffic on the 8s.
Traffic on the 9s, because we take it to the 9s.
I don't know if you sound like a wacky radio announcer as much as like a creepy clown showing up to a birthday party.
Oh, God.
Hey, Patrick. How you doing, buddy?
Oh, no.
Tell me about traffic on the 9s, Dodo.
Dodo the clown.
It's just clown cars from here to the horizon.
Those voices are very close. They're adjacent.
Oh, what was that?
That was special, Austin.
I stumbled into it.
It was special.
And it took me over. There's a new It movie coming, right? So
that's what it was. A promo for the movie It.
Wow.
Part 17.
I need to add it to my list of characters I can do as a tabletop GM. Weird,
creepy,
wacky
clown
guy.
Yeah, you definitely need to add that to your stable. That's really going to make a session. That's
What's good, internet? I'm Austin Walker. Welcome to Waypoint Radio. Joining me as always... Daniel Riendo.
Hi. How you doing?
No, don't bring it back. Patrick Klepek.
I retract that you could be named Dodo the Clown, as the chat points out, because due to your anti-Burden Cage bias, that may interfere with
your ability to
embrace the name Dodo.
Dodos walk until they die, so...
If they caged Dodos, we might still
have
some.
We might have some Dodos.
Correct.
That's true. Also joining me, Rob Zachney.
How's
joining
going,
us in our Brooklyn studio, which is great.
Yay.
Yeah, you're
here for
came back east.
A couple of days at least, right?
Yeah, here till Wednesday. Here to play some games.
We're gonna play some games, shoot some video.
Desk space that was made for two people and now has four.
I don't have a desk anymore.
Rob, that's true. I took
my desk.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, that's fine.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, your first day at Waypoint, you just pick a fight with the biggest guy in the yard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then nobody will question you.
That's correct.
I think, Rob, you're the biggest guy in the yard. You're tall, and I feel like we could take on this whole office together.
I think we could.
I think you guys could, no question.
Like, and after the Thor Ragnarok trailer, I just saw, like, I am ready
to
do that.
With or without a hammer.
Yeah.
That hammer's
hammer
gone.
Optional.
Can I be your, like, little sidekick who everybody thinks is super weak, but I actually am, like,
no, you're
powerful?
Actually the toughest person at Vice. You're actually the person who would beat everyone up here.
I don't know. I'm pretty small.
Yeah. Patrick, you gonna just phone in for this street fight, or?
I'm gonna watch.
I don't think you want me. I could be the distraction. I'll just take the hit while you guys figure out what to do next.
That's useful. That can add up.
He can
motivate us. Like,
yeah.
Patrick can get
Pixel
his ass
can
kicked.
Be there.
I look the closest to an actual clown, so maybe I could, like, dress up.
Oh, my God. I am just now imagining you in clown makeup, and it's fucking terrifying.
Yeah.
Have you ever done that for Halloween?
No, but, you know, I've got a daughter now, so give it time. But I won't do it in, like, traditional clown makeup, which is already terrifying on its own. I'll just go straight for the It makeup. Like, you know,
right. There'll
be a
all
costume
the way.
This fall.
Oh, God.
Get the umbrella and everything, too.
There really will be. They're really,
ready to float.
Are you excited for that, by the way?
I've never read It, despite being, like, an enormous Stephen King fan. It's just, like, one of the ones that floated by me. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Mm.
Uh-huh. It floated by you.
Mm. But you saw the original, like...
When I saw... When I was younger, it sort of got ruined.
Oh, boy.
What we do is we say apostrophe it apostrophe, which is how we designate that we're talking about a title. That's a headline
so
joke.
So actors never call it by its name. They call it the clown novel.
Oh, do they?
It's a superstition.
Ooh.
Oh, interesting.
No, they don't. No, of course not.
I thought you're living in LA. I thought maybe you'd pick some things up.
I thought you knew some of this shit.
No, I'm just saying, like, there's an easy way around this. We take the Macbeth approach. We go the Scottish play route.
The movie, so the clown, based on the clown novel story. It by right. Stephen King.
Yeah, mm-hmm.
That's so long. The clowns. Tell us about the clown story.
When
tell us the clown story again.
When young Patrick rented the clown story by convincing his friend's parent that it was about a clown that did not murder people, it came on two VHS tapes because it was a TV miniseries and. Either we did not, like, put that together, or the movies were put in reverse order, but we watched the second tape first. And so, if you were to watch, I don't know what the adaptation of it is going to do, so I don't want to actually spoil in case, like, there's a thing with a spider in it, and yeah. I'll
are
leave
back
it at
that.
Are
we back at spiders again? I can't believe we're back here.
We are.
And if you just have that part happen out of nowhere, it kind of like you don't understand what's happening in that film, and so we just got confused and never got around to watching the whole thing.
There's a spider bit in it.
The clown novel.
Yes.
The clown, yeah.
So is he just at that point like just sort of stacking pathologies on top of each other? It's like the Long Island iced tea of like scares.
Yeah.
Where it's just like, all right, and a little, now we got this clown.
There's
and we're
other
drop
shit
a spider
in that
on top
also
of it.
Also VHS tapes.
Right.
You ever watch Videodrome?
Whoa.
They're terrifying. Terrifying.
People pulling them out of your, okay.
Oh, yeah. Putting them in, pulling them out. It's just not great.
I would take a Stephen King like body horror, like Videodrome style.
Hell yeah.
Like I want the Stephen King version of FX. Is that the name of that movie? What's the movie I'm thinking of? I always get this movie. It's another movie by the director of Videodrome. It has to do with gameplay. These guys are making video games.
Yeah, it has Jude Law in it.
Yes,
and
what is it?
Existence. Yeah, there
why
you
did
go.
I say FX, the TV channel?
Well, you know.
That's just completely wrong.
Right.
Existence is really interesting also. And also the director's name is?
David Cronenberg. There you
thank
go.
Thank you. It's Monday morning. I'm not all
my
here.
My favorite director, probably. If I had to pick one.
People on the internet are mad that I'm not a big fan of Monday morning.
I mean, I don't know where you're coming
wait,
from.
Wait, who
folks
is it?
On the
who's
internet.
A big fan of, like...
So a couple of weeks ago, Eric Sunderman and I, Eric Sunderman is the EIC of
Noisy,
one of our music sites at Advice. And we were in the kitchen getting coffee. And we were just like this was like a Thursday. And he was like, what do you think the best, this is my Eric voice.
I remember this.
What do you think the best day of the week is? they're really good Eric, if you know Eric.
I mean, that's not bad.
And he goes... And I go like, I think I actually kind of like a Thursday. Like,
yeah,
I can
Thursday
see
is my day. Right.
Correct
Thursday
is answer. My day.
Yeah, I can
answer.
See the weekend, but I'm still in it. I'm still in it. I still have the energy. Uh-huh. I'm not like I don't have senioritis. Like I'm not like checked out. And he's like, oh, you know, for me, I think it's like Tuesday or something like that.
Yeah.
And this woman came in who we don't know because Vice is very big. She's like, for me, it's definitely Monday. And Eric and I were just like, what?
Look at this fucking apple
look at
polisher.
This fucking keener.
Yeah.
As our friends in Canada would say, like. And I'm someone on Twitter was like, you're just saying that because you're jealous. I'm like, yeah, you goddamn right I'm jealous. No shame in my jealousy. I don't have any energy on Monday mornings except for the energy of a weird, wacky clown murderer. So apparently that's what I got. How has everyone's weekend been?
Really good.
Really good.
I had a really good weekend. I slept in until like 3:30 p.m. on Saturday, and that was amazing. And then yesterday I spent the day at the Myrtle Ave Street Fair teaching CPR to the fine citizens of Ridgewood, volunteering
did they learn
with
it?
My ambulance.
Did you
yeah,
like,
they learned it. You can learn CPR in like 2 minutes. It's actually very quick.
That sounds quicker than
no. It's genuinely a very fast thing to learn.
Are there like demonstrations, or could you do it over the microphone?
We had three. Well, we have mannequins. We have a baby mannequin, a child mannequin, and an adult mannequin. So we learn all the different methods. Yeah,
nice.
It's really good. I had a woman who came in and was like, she needed to learn CPR because, and I quote, "It's the end of days because of Trump." So I was like, yeah, all
I'm
right.
not sure CPR is going to be the thing. Like,
she wanted to be ready for the apocalypse.
Like jackboots on the stairs. All right, time to start doing compressions.
You know, you could get out the vote, lady, instead of worrying about choking.
I was
hanging out with some friends on Friday evening.
Good thing to know.
And someone brought up that someone who had just moved to New York, a friend of mine just moved to New York, and he said, well, when I moved into the city, I went to a website that told me that showed me how different – what the different radii were of bomb explosions, of various bombs to see where I should get an apartment so I could be – make sure that like if something happened at
the
United
the
Nations.
Fringe.
So I've done that. But here's
– You've done that?
Yeah, of course.
I mean, I'll admit I did recently. I mean, I own a house. I'm sort of stuck for a long time, but I did look up like where am I in the blast radius if Chicago gets hit? I was like, what does that mean?
Look up crime statistics, but not bombs.
A few nights ago, I was checking projected missile ranges for North Korean.
I just assume I'm fucked, dog. Like, if it drops, I'm done.
You're dead.
This is kind of the point, is that actually you kind of want to be in the circle of maximum destruction, because otherwise you're just going to die of radiation.
Yeah, I'm going to start living.
Like, you want it quick.
At the UN.
Yeah.
That's like,
you're either somewhere in those circles, or you're not in those circles and you're fine, but then you might as well be at ground zero if you're in that.
Yeah.
I'd want to be there, so it's just like, done. It's just over.
Yeah.
I don't want to be – your situation, Patrick, is like this is how you get into some Walking Dead shit. Like, you'll live and then like you're going to be on the outskirts and have to put together a ragtag band of survivors.
Yeah. I'm just far enough when I looked. I think I'm like 35, 40 miles outside the city. So it's like blast radius, I'm fine. But all the fallout
– Yeah, radiation sickness.
The winds will bring it out by me, and then that's when I got to worry about like water supply and like –
It doesn't look like your house materials are going to like be resistant to gamma radiation.
I don't know. I don't have a basement. Yeah. I don't have a basement. So I got to – my goal over the next year is to like befriend someone that lives around my neighborhood with a pool. Because if we don't get nuked, I definitely want to swim. Like, that's cool.
And
but also have a backup plan and find someone with a basement. So I'm working on that. I don't have that part yet.
Good humor on Waypoint Radio. Know? Good existential angst. Oh, speaking of that, I beat Nier Automata over the weekend. Automata. I always get my...
Automata.
I always say Automata.
Automata.
I beat that game all the way. I got all the end. I got the five core endings.
Nice.
Yes.
And then a handful of other ones. And that's we need to do a spoiler podcast.
We're going to do a spoiler podcast.
Yet. We're gonna have a special guest probably.
Yes.
This is gonna be exciting.
2B is coming in.
2B. We got 2B on the line. To just talk shit at us. She's just going to insult us for 3 hours. But, like, at the end, she's going to let you know, like, she does really care. She really does. Yeah. You know, she has emotions.
And I have questions into designer Yokotaro, but unsurprisingly, he's, like, exceedingly busy, given that his game has, like, done really well. So I'll get those back at some point, in which I asked I expressed concern in our Discord chat that Square Enix would tell me these questions are unacceptable when I submitted them. Because I read a bunch of Yokotaro interviews and was like, he's very thoughtful and he seems like he's okay with, like, curveballs. And so, like, what happens if you ask Yokotaro if he believes in God and what his history with religion is? And then I didn't get it knocked down and they translated them, so... We'll find out what that is in a couple of weeks, hopefully.
There's so much to talk about that game that we do need to do a full spoiler cast, but I do just briefly want to say that I think that there is just some really good work done in that game that really struggles with, like, despair in a way that I don't recognize happening in most games, where, like, again and again and again, it is not a game that despairs. It's a game that is interested in despair narratively and mechanically, and like it fucking pushes you there.
The despair is not a phase the game goes through where it's like this is where the character loses hope.
No,
like, despair is the overall.
It's like there's despair and then normalization and then more despair that helps you recontextualize that moment of normalization really well.
But it's not just sad for the sake of being sad. Like,
no.
It engages with the emotional arc of dread, existential dread, sadness, like lonely, like that, like it's not just like thematic, like it's a thematic trapping, but it's like a thematic trapping that like it really says like, well, let's actually engage with what this means from like it's a story about robots, but it's also a story about humanity, like, and it's through line through that,
which is fucking shocking given some of the facts about that world.
Yes.
How much it has to say about people.
Yes.
It is really interesting history, and not human history, the notion of history, the notion of like what history does, what knowledge of history does, what like knowing the limits of society, like it's really fucking smart and really touching. It was definitely one of those games of like, oh, I need to I had plans today, but I beat this game this morning instead. So I'm
what
gonna
if I just
to
lie like, down instead?
What if I just lie down for a couple hours and listen to some music and just don't do it? The problem is I was playing that game while listening to A Crow Looked at Me, which is the new Mount Eerie album, which is about...
Oh, God, Austin, what are you doing?
It's a bad... I don't know. It's weird. That's that album of Phil. So Phil Elverum, who is this great musician's wife, sadly passed away like 3 years ago, and he made like this just devastating album about it. And it's like, I'm just going to give myself into this. I'm just going to throw myself just near Automata.
Patrick is in the darkness.
Yeah,
thinking about your decisions. That's how it is.
But like, it was actually a really – it's really good to see when people – don't give in to their despair, but like treat it seriously and think about like sadness and existential crisis and angst in a really material way. I like it when people like grapple with that stuff, and both of those things do it. So that was my weekend. Wacky Morning Zoo Crew. I played The Surge also this morning.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Which is not wacky. And well, there was a really wacky moment.
There was some wackiness there.
So The Surge is the new Souls-like? Is that what we decided to call these games?
It fits the Brooklyn definition.
Waypoint is settling on Souls-like. The rest of the world can figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Totally. And it's by Deck 13, who previously did Lords of the Fallen?
Yes. Which I guess is like was often described as sort of a easy on-ramp to Souls-like design. Yes. Like it's not nearly as punishing. It's a little more approachable for people that are used to just like character action games. But it definitely takes a lot of the tenets. I never ended up playing it for whatever reason. Wanted to try it, but I just never got around to it.
It's The Surge. So I played like 45 minutes, an hour of it, like introductory sequence stuff. And there's some cool ideas there, which is like
it's
the
robots.
Thing that
it's robots.
It's robots. So that's
It is the thing that we want From Software to do. Like I want robots from Software. I mean, I know the Armored Core, but
I was kind of bored by the robots. If I'm
the robots
honest.
Were not that interesting. Like, well. There are robotics that are interesting, but the robots are not.
Look, just overall, the aesthetic of that game was not super appealing to me.
Yeah, it opens in a kind of like future scrapyard, meets like engineering, industrial.
Okay. It's like
place.
An amazing backdrop in the opening of Destiny. Like it's old Russia, like the Cosmodrome.
It's like a little like the Cosmodrome.
If it's way less evocative and exciting.
Yeah.
And that was kind of like, it's kind of like, what if you took all of the suggestion of like a fallen, like, age of space travel and glory, and what if it was just a bunch of like shit piles?
Yeah,
like it was like somebody was running a space.
Can you tell me one thing you actually saw in that space that was a
booster rocket?
Residue.
There was a booster rocket residue. No,
yeah. Oh my god, the graffiti.
There's a lot of dumb graffiti.
So that's actually my actual biggest beef. So let me just say like the things in all previews. We just build the hamburger, which I hate. Oh, there's some good things and there's some bad things. Oh, there's some. Who knows? It could be good in the end. The things that I walked away from it feeling like pretty positive on were like, oh, there's some interesting stuff here in terms of resource management, a key Souls-like element. When you level up, you get a thing called core power, which in my mind is sort of like RAM. It's sort of like, oh, I have this much RAM. It's sort of like in Nier when you unlock slots that you can slot stuff into. The thing is, your skills take up core power, and so does your certain equipment. Like, oh, you want to use that sword, you want to use that arm, it's going to take 5 core power.
Hmm.
But do you want to do that, or do you want to do the skill that gives you heal over time? And like that is like, ooh, okay. And then also, it's a one currency system. So you're using that money to add more core slots or more core power, or you're using it to craft more better equipment, or you're using it to upgrade your skills or whatever. And so like, that stuff is cool, and I'm interested
in it.
See,
I glazed over during all that because I'm like, okay, so it's an RPG.
Well, you were watching me do it also.
Yeah,
you
but no,
doing
but,
that good
no.
calculus.
But also,
you
it's
doing
like
those numbers.
It's seriously like if you were the PR person pitching this game, it's like, let me tell you what makes our game special. You got these slots.
Well, no, you're never going to sell the game on the slots.
Yeah, but this is. But I'm like, you're like, here's the good thing.
But that's why this is the thing. It's like that's why the Dark Souls PR eventually got the fuck out of the way. It's like, oh, it's real hard, which is really boring, but really effective marketing.
Yeah,
and there is all that sort of nuance there. I'm going to the people, Rob. I'm telling them what's really there. I'm
people
giving them
know about the slots.
The people want to know about the slots.
So, if you like RPGs and slots,
yeah,
stuff to put in those slots.
Yes, uh-huh.
I have great news for you about The Surge. You can just socket that shit
exciting.
Right in.
Unless you can't, in which case you need
ready
to upgrade
to
your
slotted.
Sockets.
Like once,
nice.
Once
don't say
nice.
That. That means a different
nice.
Thing.
Does that mean a thing?
We're gonna.
I think it does.
It does now.
There's a lot of slots in this game that just need to be filled.
You gotta
you
fill
need
those
to fill
slots
them any way you can.
But
get creative.
The thing that to me, like, and I think both of you as fans of sci-fi, all of you as fans of sci-fi,
yes.
can address this. But you guys were watching me play, like. just like a deeply boring and like very constructed world. And obviously the Dark Souls games are also super constructed worlds. Obviously. That's why they're so good. They're well-constructed games. But you could see the artifice here in a real way.
And first impressions matter a lot. Like, usually the opening of a game is where you're probably going to establish the identity.
Like, the bit that we were playing was like 30 minutes in. We don't have the opening, so maybe there is some rad opening sequence that we missed.
Okay.
We just kind of crash-landed on this scrapyard planet or something. Who knows?
But there are some weird details in that opening area. You noticed some graffiti, Danielle.
Yes, I misread it as residue. Yeah. And it was resistance.
I think it was that what it was?
Resolve.
Resolve.
That's what it was.
Yeah, it was like, don't forget your earth roots. Keep your resolve.
Keep your resolve.
Or something.
Yeah.
Who's this for? That's not what, no one's ever written.
Do you write that outside of your engineering lab?
Keep your roots. Underline three times.
Resolve.
But then they pay off the roots thing because you go into this engineering facility, like / med bay, and Rob noticed this.
Yeah. There is this like sparse, slightly like Hamilton Lighthouser Walkman type band playing on a radio in the environment. And there's nothing, look, there's nothing in the aesthetic of this game.
It's like
that suggests
country.
People listen
to
music.
It's like honky tonk.
Yeah.
No, it's not
wasn't
honky-tonk.
All the way to honky tonk.
All right.
There were like some like flourishes where I could see
light honky tonk light.
It felt like contemporary indie country.
Yeah,
okay.
All right. Like roots guy, rock type
roots
thing.
Again, keep your roots. That's what they meant.
Yeah. Yes, that's
rock.
Actually. It turns out, like in the future, in the grim darkness of the near future,
right?
You need your roots rock
and the stuff there that was like they were trying to build around that. I guess was like it felt a little bit like it's like the outer rim of some sort of sci-fi future.
It's a garage. This is what the mechanics listen to when they're fixing all
this
stuff.
But in that space, there's no suggestion.
Yeah.
There's no suggestion, though, of there being
people,
a life to that space. There's no interior life to the environments in this game. And so having this band playing in the background is kind of weird because it's like I can't project a version of this reality where there's someone here listening to this music doing their space mechanic stuff.
I think they wanted the music to do the heavy lifting.
Well, the thing is, totally. And the thing is that the way you do your heavy lifting is you sit in a chair and it's all robots that do it. So there isn't a mechanic. No one was there like, I got my robot wrench doing my robot work. Like, it's just, no, you sit in the chair and the robots do it all for you. So there isn't.
So you gotta listen to the music.
I guess to give you that old timey feel.
But it also dovetailed, like, so that weird, like, that feeling of something just having been sort of dropped into an environment to lend it an idea of color and character without really having thought it through, I think also held true with the helpful plot-specific, mechanic-specific audio log.
That was the thing that made me then think about when we talk about what works so well in Dark Souls about the storytelling and lore stuff.
Even if you're not
even if it's not like your jam, it's vague and it feels like, oh, this is reflecting something that happened in this space. Whereas in this one, it was like, and we found an audio log of a guy talking to another guy about making sure you got your power core charged to open that door. And it's like, that happened to be right here near the first door that I needed to open with the power core. Okay.
And it's this illicit audio log of these guys are stealing materials from the yard.
Right.
And so the guy's leaving the audio log to his buddy. He's like, yo, if you don't keep your power core charged, security's going to be all over you, man.
If a voice could be
recorded that.
If a voice could have red text as if to say this is an important word, it would have.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Fuck.
At the same time, though, like those.
I get it.
Those games are also pitched to a slightly, like, they're not meant, you know, they're like, they like explicitly were talking about this game in like a Dark Souls light sort of, like, that was sort of the wink wink nod nod about Lord of the Fallen. So yes, that stuff is ham fisted and
isn't
bad.
Souls kind of evocative as hell though? Like,
yeah,
it's sparse, but it's still like a place for your imagination to explore.
You gotta work, dude. Like, those games make you work for it, and like, that's the gratification. But I can also understand, like, there being an audience where people were like, well, like, if all the way to the left, like, is like your standard character action game, like that, I want some of the souls without all the souls, and like that's
gotcha.
You know, essentially when people make the argument for like Dark Souls had an easy mode, like, I don't think it ever should. Like, I think that compromises what Dark Souls is. But then there's also a space for games that like pull from it, but don't pull all of it.
Right.
So I'm not. There are better ways to do that ham-fisted storytelling, but I'm also cognizant of the fact that they're aiming at something a little bit different. And then if you are a hardcore Souls fan, it's easy to kind of lob shots at this game or Lords of the Fallen.
So let's Just to talk about like that stuff though too, it's like the first thing I noticed is like, whoa, the camera control is super loose. Like you can spin around on the dime, you can look everywhere. It's really easy to
almost
do all that stuff.
Like a little bit,
almost in terms of camera control. Yeah. And in terms of like the feel of weapons, like I tried out a couple of different weights of weapons, none of them really satisfied. And then I think there's probably some like really smart person is going to write a 1,200-word deep dive on the fact that this game has executions.
Is that your foreshadowing, like, your week?
No.
Like, are you, like,
I don't have the time anymore.
Is going to write
this.
A 1,200-word deep dive.
I think we're
going to
get a really great breakdown of, like, the difference between, like, Dark Souls victories, hard-fought Dark Souls victories, especially in PvP, where it's like, oh, okay, oh, this is okay. Sword, okay, oh, they're coming in. And, like, there's, like, a very – everything feels – tense, and then you end up winning because you got like a little fucking stab in. It was like the last stab you needed, and it was all just like deep breath of relief, and the smallest victories can feel really monumental. Whereas here, there's a system where your weapons build up a thing called energy. They all build it up at a different rate, and eventually you build up enough to do an execution. You just hold down the X button, and your guy, like, it was like, bro, I got a Space Marine power sword that has a saw on it. I counterattacked and then chopped off your arm. Wah! And it's, like, really straightforward, and like, it feels good to do that because video games. But also, it has none of the feeling that I've earned something by getting the enemy down all of the way. I've gotten them down halfway and then held down the X button, and then my character did something cool. Yeah. I didn't do
you
something
just
cool.
You built a meter passively.
I built up a meter, exactly. Yeah. And so, like, that stuff is like, they're going for a different thing, and they will find an audience, probably. And I like sci-fi shit a lot. I'm going to play this game. I'll probably beat this game. And who knows? There could be stuff 3 hours in where they take the training wheels off and go, like, full-on, super evocative, or even just, like, really novel or interesting sci-fi stuff. Maybe they keep the guardrails on. Guardrails and training wheels, both of them.
All of
the different
There's
metaphors
a lot of
for this.
On these robots,
right? And maybe they'll do that, and they'll completely win me. Like, I'm going to give it way more than this opening segment, but yeah, it definitely. I don't know.
It doesn't make your heart surge.
It doesn't make my heart surge. I didn't even talk about this. There's like you can target individual body parts. You're cutting. Like I said, you're cutting off people's arms and then using their. Like robot weapons.
There's not just slots, folks.
There's
you
robot.
Can target individual body parts.
But like that's the game. They want you to get excited about like, oh, I targeted his head because it didn't have armor on it, and then I hit R1, 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 R2, and now he doesn't have a head, and held down X, and now there's no more head, and I can use his helmet. Like that's what they want you to get psyched about.
All right.
At the same time, I kind of feel like you're inventing this like Dark Souls fan to a degree. Like it's not a community I'm a part of, but what I don't hear from Dark Souls fans is like, oh man, I love how you can like, I love all these targeting options.
No, there aren't. But they that is definitely in their PR. Dismemberment is definitely a thing they're trying to sell you.
Right.
They are.
Yeah.
They want
but then
you to
keep,
get stoked.
But then you keep including. Target body parts.
Dark Souls got rid of its only dismemberment mechanic after the first game, I think.
It did.
Yeah.
Yeah,
we used in Dark Souls 1 and in Demon Souls, I think you were able to chop off the tails of a lot of enemies to get help you craft special equipment and stuff like that.
Dragon's Dogma kept that. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah? Where's Dragon's Dogma 2?
Lizards.
Huh?
I wish...
Well,
there's Dragon's Dogma online.
I'll settle. I'll compromise, Capcom.
We should investigate that. Can we play that somehow? There must be a way.
I don't think it has sort of like the Phantasy Star loophole where like it's in English somewhere, just not in U.S. servers, and you can use a proxy. I think Dragon's Dogma is just straight up still Japanese.
We just have to go to Japan.
That's all.
It's fine.
If I went to Japan, that's right. If you go there, then you understand Japanese, and then I can play.
That's how it works. That's how video games work.
You've been at least watching some Persona. You understand Japanese now.
I watched like 30 hours of Persona this weekend.
That's a lot. How's that? Well, that's funny because like no one else has because they're not allowing anybody to stream it.
Yeah, I know.
So
I'm on the couch. My girlfriend is playing it.
That's not true.
I'm playing Zelda.
You could have watched probably a few hours of Persona. The actual streaming rules that Atlas and Sega have put down is like there's a specific point after which you can't watch. It's like through the first three dungeons or something.
Yeah.
So I just wanted to be clear.
It's way past
but
that.
What are your thoughts so far?
It's really interesting. I've never played a Persona. I've played Shin Megami Tensei games before, for sure. I played that cool 3DS game that was based on a like 1997 extremely cyberpunk SMT. It was Soul Hackers, which
is dope.
Was rad and I loved it. So I'm somewhat familiar with the gameplay just from that, you know, the demon fusion and sort of like how dungeons work and that sort of thing. It's really cool. It's really stylish. That was the first thing I sort of noticed. And it's
what did you and Patricia name the character and the
Finn,
team?
Named after our first cat.
Nice. What's the name? Did you name your crime team yet?
I don't think she has.
Okay.
Maybe she has and I just don't know about it. She probably would name it Ori, so it's fun.
Like, you can't name a team Ori.
I mean.
Maybe you can.
Orion. It's short for Orion.
Yeah.
You know, that's fun. Welcome to Danielle's Cat Hour. It's fun.
Always.
You know?
So what if anything has, like, caught your interest about the game so far?
I mean, honestly, so I typically don't like anime stuff that's based in high school.
Woo! Fuck
which
anime!
I know,
wow.
I know.
Right? Patrick, shut up. We're about to be on a near spoiler case.
Hold on.
Austin, that's a video game. That's not anime.
Oh my God, my dude.
I do like the bike anime.
Also, I want to point out, that excuse,
yeah.
excuse to say, it's my favorite thing to say on Twitter is people are like, dude, yeah. You play a lot of anime video games. And I say, it's a video game, not anime. Like, you can see the steam come off their Twitter account.
It's true.
Like, as I say that.
There are explosions happening.
Yeah, it's true. Someone wrote in, not to skip ahead to questions, but someone definitely wrote in to say not all anime avatars are trolls.
That's true.
And then they ended it by saying, P.S. Dark Souls 2 is the absolute worst, yep. Proving that people with anime avatars often are trolls. I'm just like, don't be the, you know, be the change you want to see in the world. That's all.
That's true.
But I can make
exceptions. No, I just hated high school. High school is a hellish,
fair.
Dark
high
time
school's
for
terrible.
Me. And like things that make high school seem like, what a great time that you were cool and had cool times with your buds. I'm like, puke, barf, barf, puke. I have exceptions. No question.
Waypoint High.
Like, I like the Waypoint High.
The
was
whole
great.
Thing we did.
You know, the whole
we
thing
all hated
we did.
High school.
That was fine because we got to recreate it in our own
it
image.
It was our high school.
It was our high school. Correct. And our high school would have been great.
Yes.
I like the bike anime mostly.
Ian
for the
never would have been there. That motherfucker.
Ian. Fuck Ian. God. Eat shit, Ian. God.
Anyway.
One day that'll make sense. Yeah. Maybe.
I guess.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
My question, though, is like, a lot of high school anime, I wouldn't say does make high school look awesome, but I think Persona in particular is definitely about like high school is a nightmare in which you are engaged in daily psychological combat.
But you're so stylish and cool.
And that's before you go into the nightmare world.
That's for sure. That's for sure.
You've been playing 4, so you both are deep in Persona right
now. Yeah. How are you liking 4?
Oh, I'm liking 4 quite a bit.
With Chie?
Chie is great. Basically, it's like I work with you by day, and then I play a game starring you in the
it's
evening.
It's pretty fun, right?
Basically Chie.
Yeah,
except
no,
for she likes steak a lot. That's the only difference.
Look, but everyone in the game likes steak. It's like
that's true.
Look,
that's
a
good point.
It is pretty dire in Persona 4. Like, these kids are – they have a hard – like, it's not a great place to go.
Life is terrible.
Their steak habits were dire.
No, but they are dire. It's like, they're like, oh man, let me show you our local delicacy. This is what our town is famous for.
Steak.
And it's steak on a stick. Everyone's like, oh damn.
And they dip
like,
it in ketchup.
This is legit.
No!
It's really sad. So everyone's like wild about steak.
That's fair.
In this world. That and like microwavable ramen. But anyway.
Yeah, they're big into that.
But the point is, I actually – it's a weird thing. It's like a lot of Persona feels kind of boring and yet I'm compelled by it. And I'm still working through that. Like it's this weird thing of a lot of times the intensity or enjoyment like curve is kind of flat in a lot of ways, but there's ritual and routine in that game that ends up being comforting and sort of magnetic in a way that I can't fully understand why it's having that effect. But, like, I check the weather report in the morning. I'm like, am I have to go dungeon raiding today? Nope, don't have to go dungeon raiding. Oh, cool. So I'll get to go to work and make some money. And then I'll go buy some books. And then I'll hang out with my friends.
It's
which
great.
Friends do I hang out
it
with?
It sounds like a cool life.
Right.
Yeah.
Right? Which of the friends on 5 are you interested in hanging out with the most
well,
so far?
Well, Patricia definitely hangs out with the cool doctor a lot.
She's very good.
She's great. I like the cool doctor.
Cool doctor is very – there's a doctor who makes you drugs.
Yeah. does research
so, like,
on you.
White is like your advisor.
Yeah, basically.
Okay.
She's like, oh yeah, you can go there to buy stuff. And then she's like, I got some specials. You overhear her like selling.
Yeah.
This is like very early game. This is what the character
is. Is the game
stuff.
Aware that this is weird?
Yeah.
Okay.
Totally. And you're like giving her gifts and there's like a weird sexual tension between you and the hot doctor. And it's like, what's going on
That's
here?
That game. That's that
that
game.
Is what the, that's what I like Persona about 4. This game. Yeah. Like, I like how weird it is. And,
Continue.
No, go ahead.
Don't you worry.
There is a
you
thought.
You will get your medical professional plot line
it will
in
happen.
Persona 4. You just keep going, buddy.
All right.
You want a doctor
keep
situation.
Trucking,
God
you know?
Damn.
Got a real doctor situation in that game.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
What I like about it is the central conceit. Like, I really like that it's, like, psychological warfare. You're going into people's mind. Psychonauts is, like, my favorite
right?
game of all time.
Sure.
This is basically Psychonauts the RPG. I mean, okay, you're twisting a few other things, and it's very, very Japanese. It's very anime, but, like, it's kind of the same idea. You're mm-hmm. going in, you're sort of conquering people's personal demons. You're doing it with, like, this very engaging, I think, combat that has all the demon fusions. That's what I got into the most when I played Soul Hackers.
Right.
It's, like, the demon fusions and, you know, finding the right combinations. I'm really enjoying watching it. I mean, I'm certainly watching. This is not me playing parts of it. I'm just
right.
watching
You're
Patricia.
Just watching Patricia play.
I mean, her favorite game of all time is Persona 4. She played it twice in a row kind of thing,
yeah.
like, for months of her life.
That's a lot of Persona.
She loved it. She's not even, like, super into anime either, but Persona is, like, her jam, like, 100%. So,
I do. On the notion yeah. of the kind of, like, weird adults, teens situation in that game, I do want to point out a couple of people on Twitter who either speak Japanese or who know about Japanese culture, specifically the latter, who know about Japanese culture,
yeah.
especially Tom James, who's a localizer, Iotenki on Twitter, has been talking a lot about how Persona 5 is kind of specifically about contemporary Japanese politics.
There's a lot of that in
like,
there.
So there's
yeah.
a, there's
so
a warning at the top
yeah.
of that game that is like, hey, these aren't real people. And for us, like, as Americans who probably don't know much about the contemporary Japanese politic, like, it's like, why is that there at all? But, like, apparently a lot of the stories are just like, oh, that's that guy. That's that specific
oh,
member
that's
of
so
the government
like-
who's like, it's all just like shitty corrupt officials. It's like, there's references to specific religious organizations. Like, it's very attached to, like, the conservative base of modern Japanese politics,
oh,
is my
so
understanding.
Cool. Yeah.
So there's a lot. I'm excited for someone, again, someone very smart and educated and handsome or whatever, you know, to write about it.
Or beautiful,
yeah.
or beautiful
or
whatever.
Or whatever you want to be.
However.
Whatever they are.
So
is
there, like, an element of, like, anxiety, like, present through the game about, like, the future of your society?
Definitely.
And, like, the lost economic generation in some ways?
In
like,
a lot of ways, yeah.
yeah.
I think that's like a very, very core sort of sub-theme that's sort of running around through. I mean, there is a character that you talk to all the time who's this sort of like Bernie Sanders-ish. Like, maybe not
Wait,
Bernie.
Those are Photoshops?
That guy who looks like Bernie?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Well, he talks like Bernie. It's more he's
he
like
talks
socialism
like Bernie.
Cool,
he's
kid.
Like, well,
like,
you got to share.
This is just my
you know?
Leftist Twitter, like shopping stuff.
Basically.
In a
well,
persona.
No, it's he really says all yeah. that stuff.
Oh, hell yeah.
Like,
yeah.
and you go and chat with him. He's one of the guys you can befriend and, like, hang out with and, like, you know, improve your relationship with him and everything, which is kind of great. And I love that aspect.
Yeah. And that comes back, I think, to Rob's thing of just, like, these are games in which you can just go have conversations with people.
Yeah.
Persona 3, my favorite social link, which is, like, oh, I'm going to go work at the bookstore after school and just, like, meet the old couple that runs the bookstore. And there is something here to untangle. We actually got an email about this. It was slide into the question bucket here.
Yeah, let's do it.
Question bucket. If you have questions, you can send those questions to gamingadvice.com. Use the subject question to let us know that you got a question.
Yeah.
We'll put it in the old bucket. This comes in from Alexander in Norway, who says, with the release of Persona 5, I've been thinking about why it seems only Japanese devs are interested in depicting everyday life in big non-indie games.
Hmm.
Persona and Yakuza are two examples of games set in normal everyday environments, and much of the games are about day-to-day life. Of course, the games also get way over the top and absurd, and they seem to put real care into making sure all the small details and everything are accurate. Eating at restaurants, hanging with friends, going on a date, office life, and so on. Western games mostly focus on war, fantasy, and sci-fi, and usually not much else. The only thing I can think of that comes close is GTA. What do you think? Would it be interesting to see big Western games tackle the mundane more often?
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Yeah.
So the answer, yes, right? My, like, favorite example of this is, with, like, light spoilers, the final act of Red Dead Redemption, in which you start just doing cowboy work, You just, like, are herding cattle and doing – running to the city or running to town to pick up some general goods that the farm needs. And, I mean, it does that specifically because it's juxtaposing that with, like, the wild cowboy adventurer life that you'd previously been living. But I even just liked the kind of domestic bliss and also the kind of domestic melancholy of that section. What are some other games in the West that have done that?
Someone in the chat's pointing out Life is Strange is probably the most recent contemporary example. I mean, it's all, you know, like Persona, it's wrapped up in the fantastic as opposed to, like, the explicitly mundane. So there's probably something there where it's like, what do you do if you take out the fantastic elements? Like, what are you left with and what could you draw from that? We see a lot of that in indie games as opposed to the bigger
Night in the Woods just came up also, which I think
Night in the Woods, Gone Home, you know, Yeah, I mean, Life is Strange is one of my favorite games that year, particularly because it was like I was less interested in the fantastic elements and more interested in the relationships and how all that.
Water your plants, you know, talk to your friends. Yeah. Do all the,
did you take care of that plant?
Yeah, I did.
Did the plant live?
My plant lived.
No, my plant
died. It was a healthy plant.
I think we overwatered the plant because that's how they get you. That's a thing. You can't water it every time. God, plants.
Yeah, it's like every other day.
Yeah.
Watering.
Someone needs to water the plants in here.
Yeah, actually.
Dylan,
legitimately.
We should water the plant. Or, okay. How about you, Rob? Do you have any?
I once killed a girlfriend's cactus.
I meant the realistic.
Okay, sorry.
You killed her cactus?
I didn't think that was possible. Like, I thought it was like, how can you fuck up
a hardy plant?
Care of a cactus?
Yeah.
Turns out you can.
What did you do?
I think I might have watered it with alcohol once.
Oh, God.
So, look, I was in college. There was...
Okay.
There was... there was the bottle of vodka, and then there was the bottle of vodka filled with water for watering things.
Oh, no.
I see the problem. I see where it went wrong.
And they would hear each other. And so, at least once or twice...
every day.
The cactus may have been fed 80-proof alcohol rather than, filtered tap water.
In the chat, Friendly Truffle goes, important question, murder or neglect? And then immediately follows up, oh, that's murder.
Yeah.
It is.
It wasn't. It wasn't great. It got things off on a rocky footing the following
early
semester.
Early in the relationship?
Yeah, it was.
Have you admitted to the alcohol poisoning of the cactus, or is this new information being revealed here on Waypoint?
I don't know for sure that's what happened. I'm just theorizing what may have killed the cactus.
That's a very plausible theory.
It's plausible. I like it.
I think you got enough PC there.
I can't swear. You can
build a case, Rob.
Yeah. That may have been what happened. Anyway, in terms of games dealing with the mundane.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think some of my favorite moments in games are those parts of games where they're touching on the mundane, the daily routine, before all the crazy video game stuff starts. Like, for me, the original Mafia game was at its best when you were just a guy trying to drive a cab and, pick up fares, and then you're caught up in the middle of this mob story. And then, like, three missions later, you're, like, whacking 50 dudes. Okay, this no longer feels convincing. But no, for me, it's like, I love in the original The Darkness.
Yes.
Where that first mission, after the introductory mission, you just go back to your neighborhood and you go back to your walk up and you hang out with your girlfriend and watch
the show in the game.
No, to Kill a Mockingbird.
Oh, right.
And you just have date night.
Right.
And it's just this weird, like, there's all these comfortable domestic routines you and your girlfriend, like, have. And you also know, just because of the way the story's told, like, once that is over, once you go back out that door to the next mission, like, everything's going to change. And so, yeah.
You want to linger.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I think there's a lot. You can do a lot of characterization through the mundane. Like, it's cool to be able to have characters, like, have relationships that aren't at the fever pitch intensity of, like, a Mass Effect game where it's like, oh, so we're coworkers on a mission to save humanity.
I've for years just wanted, like, C-Sec, Mass Effect C-Sec procedural.
Yeah.
Like, you work Garrus's original job as space cop on the Citadel, and now I really want that with, like, you work night shift, and then the day you spend your time however you want, or the vice versa. And that's just like persona style.
You go to watch the vids.
Right. Where, like, with what you hang out with people, right?
Yeah.
Like, now I want that game. Nice. I'm sad.
Heavy Rain
did was some stuff there.
Some really cool stuff with the mundane and sort of grief as well, like with your son.
That stuff in the son in the very beginning of like picking him up from school.
Yeah.
And you're trying to have that relationship with him. Like, hey, it's just
really
us.
Hanging out,
single dad. Like,
do your homework.
Fucking been there.
Here's your teddy bear.
No, I'm not the single dad in this scenario. My parents divorced. So I spent a lot of time at my dad, but yeah.
You got plenty of time, Austin, to screw up.
Wow.
You got plenty of time.
Jeez. And try to forge a relationship with a child who can't stand
it. And to Jason.
Yeah.
You press X to Jason.
No, I played that sequence with a friend of mine who had gone through stuff like that in the not too distant past. Mm-hmm. And, like, it was interesting. Like, those scenes really resonated. And it's unfortunate. Like, the best parts in that game are, I think, those sort of relatable human moments. And then the problem comes when all those mechanics then turn into, all right, now you need to play Simon Says in this electrical field.
Right.
And if you don't do it perfectly, you'll die. And I much prefer the version where it's like, I need to find the right gesture to engage with this human.
I forgot about the electrical field stuff.
Oh, good.
Well, and that's the problem with, like, games feel this, like, this need to have interactivity over and over and over again. And so I think what often when you see the mundane invoked, then there's this tendency where, like, well, we got to give the player something to do. And so sometimes you see designers over-designing for the mundane when it's better just left to be simple. And, like, I actually thought Uncharted 4 did some really great work where, like, early on when Nathan Drake's at home and, like, they're just hanging out in their beach house and, you know, you play Crash Bandicoot. Like, it's they do all this really neat stuff. Like, I didn't particularly like that game, but that was probably my favorite part of that game where, like, the seeing the, like, Naughty Dog, like, approach to fidelity, like, using that in a moment like that was like, oh my god, like, I don't know how you build a whole game that, like, does just this, but holy shit, would I play a game that had that touch and that amount of attention to detail that they put into that, like, you know, 20-minute sequence.
Totally. Lots of people in the chat have a lot of great examples from smaller games also, like Stardew Valley, any of the, like, Harvest Moon, like, all of that genre of farming simulator, the Atelier games, which are really interested in just, like, running a shop and crafting things. Like, there are lots of games that are not these big budget things. I'm curious why we make that divide. Obviously, we're doing because the question asker did. Because in their mind, they're thinking like Yakuza, Persona, and then this. Like, what are the Western examples of it? But I am like, there is something special about the triple. Not special, but there is something. There is. It might have to just do with that fidelity, right? Of just. I haven't seen it rendered like this before.
Right.
I've played lots of games in the Harvest Moon vein, right? I really love Fantasy Life, which is a game that does the opposite thing, which is like it makes being a warrior feel like, oh yeah, I'm in the Warriors Guild. This is my job. I go out, I fight dragons, but really I'm just a member of this community and like I just take part in this group. Oh, I'm a mage, but really what that means is like going through all the tasks that make me a better wizard or whatever, not necessarily like going off on a huge life, you know, changing quest or whatever. So I do like that stuff in these smaller games, but there is this just maybe just scratching a different itch or like fulfilling this other fantasy when it happens in these big games where like I've told you my favorite mod for Skyrim is the one, there's two of them. I always use them in conjunction. It's like you are not the Dragonborn and like you are just a person in this world. And there are a bunch of different like, it's like alternate start mod or something. Where it's like, oh, you were a trader. You just arrived to town with a bunch of stuff to sell. You were a trader and your caravan got attacked and you're the only one left alive. You are a hunter and you start in the woods. And like, oh, wow, like what, how do I occupy that space in my head? And like maybe I'll eventually start going off to do quests, but I'll never do the main quest. And that, like, for me, is that just, like, weird, like, contemporary angst of modern life? I want to escape into a different version of the mundane life?
There's a relatability to it, I think. It's not just like, oh, I'm going to go be the Dragon Slayer hero, whatever. It's, I could be in a fantasy world where the stakes are lower. And I can chill here, but this feels like a real activity to me. Like, living this life, being a community member, that sort of thing, feels like there's a realness that your brain can kind of hook onto without it being, like, a overblown kind of fantasy that sometimes you're not in the right mindset for or the right mood for.
I think for me, some of it's part of the fantasy of like wanting to live in that world is you actually want to do some of the living in that world stuff, not the going adventuring. But like, there's this one Twitter account, you probably know what it is. I'm not going to get it. It's like 2D pixel art, like landscapes of like sci-fi settings. And there was one that like just I sort of ended up staring at for like 10 minutes, which is like a coffee shop and like a cyberpunk dystopia of like mass surveillance. And like, of course, it's like raining outside, neon lights and all that. But inside, the foreground is just people chatting and like sipping coffee while the world unfolds outside. Right. And I think that's what makes those worlds feel real to an extent, is those like relatable interactions, those relatable spaces. And very few games ever let you do that. It's always like, go to the castle and talk to the lord, and then you'll kill the dragon near the castle. And it's like, what if I just want to hang out in this castle?
What if I want to get coffee with that dragon?
Yeah, right.
You know, and chill and talk about, you know, oh god, this king is killing me.
How's the horde?
How's your horde doing, you know?
Right, like, I would love that. I would be, so I mean, so this speaks to like, Patrick, you just finished Zelda, right? Some of my favorite bits in that are those moments. Like, I kind of wrote a lot about this already when it's like, oh, you crest the hill and you see one of the villages for the first time. And it's like, wow, like, oh, wow, like people are just living their lives here. But my favorite quest ended up being a quest series that Mike Diver wrote about for
us.
Tarrytown, which I won't give into the specifics because, like, I want people to be able to find it themselves. Did you do the Tarrytown
stuff? It's on my, like, essentially, like, over this weekend I had to just say, okay, I need to finish Zelda. Yeah. And then there's all this, like, I didn't do whatever that island is that everyone always talks about.
Go do the island.
I did it, and it didn't live up to the hype to me.
You did it way too late. I told you this.
No, I...
You did it way too late.
I just kept...
If you go in there with more than 5 hearts, it's just not the same thing.
I did it, and I did the whole thing, and it was fun, and I was excited, and then I died by a lightning strike, and I got very pissed off.
Well, you shouldn't have used a metal weapon.
I wasn't... I was moving the thing to the object.
Yeah, it's made of metal.
Yeah, I guess.
That's why
even Tide Island is fine.
That's really good.
They're putting out an expansion to that game later this year. And so I want a reason to have like a bunch of stuff to go do in that game. Like I didn't feel a need to like exhaust it right now.
Right.
And so I have
a
list of things I want to go back and do. I did 60 shrines. Like, you know, I was well prepared. I've seen a lot of that world, but there's all this side stuff I didn't really dig into. And so whenever that expansion hits later this year, that'll be like a good chance to go back and like put another 30 hours into that game.
Yeah, so I won't give away the specifics of Tarrytown, but it's a reason to return to a single place that really you
I know what it is. Yeah, I found it. Like, I have the side quest set up. I just haven't.
Yeah. I'm trying not to spoil it for the listeners where, like, you'll find that place and you just come back to it and it changes over time and you just end up feeling really close to it.
Yeah.
And you aren't sitting in a coffee shop chatting about things. I wish that Zelda had that in there too. Though there are feelings – every now and then you do get a quest that does feel like that in a single community that's just like, oh, yeah, like, it's the rare time when, like, getting them 12 bananas, like, doing the boring fetch quest feels like participation.
They needed to make banana cake.
Right.
You know? Sometimes they need to make a banana cake.
So there was one specific thing where it was like a mom and her kid, and she was like, I really want to make – the kid really wants paella, and we don't have the flour we need. Can you go pick up some flour? It's like, yeah, I'll pick up some flour. Yeah, just hang out here for a second. I'll go get you some flour.
There's only like 5 of those in the entire game.
Right.
Out of 500 things you can do.
There's like such warmth, and it does feel like you are really there. It's like almost an inversion of The Witcher, and this is not a bad thing, but like The Witcher has just like – this deeply professional context for everything you're doing. Like, I'm here to fucking do my job. You're going to pay me money. I'm going to do a valuable service for the community as an outsider. I'm going to come in, set things right, and leave. And with Link in Zelda, it feels like I'm going to come in, set things right, and I'll stick around for a little. I'll do some fishing. I'll hang out just until it's nighttime because you have this cool bonfire.
Okay. However... let me tell you about some things that happen in The Witcher that I think do humanize.
Totally.
Like,
no, that was going to be my next point, was that The Witcher does a lot
totally
of what we're
does.
Talking
it
about.
Absolutely does.
So just two things. One, actually, I think Gwent actually ends up helping a lot.
Totally.
Which is that everyone's like, so we got some time to kill here.
Yeah.
Like, I love there's this mission where you're going out on an ambush with your crew. And, like, it's this high-stakes thing, but you get there, it's an ambush.
Right.
You're set up hours before
you're
the
You're staking
ambush.
It out.
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
So everyone's like, you know, we got time. And everyone's like, hell yeah, we do. Let's
have the
play game of Gwent. Which is...
Does it interrupt your game of Gwent? Because that's what I want it to do.
I think the game finishes and then you're immediately in the combat.
I want it to just be like in the middle of the game of Gwent, you hear horseshoes on the ground. You're like, oh, We got to go,
yeah.
buddy.
Let the and table
the
and guy, run.
And
yeah.
the other player's like, yeah, you go do it. Cheats.
Yeah.
yeah or it takes the money.
we'll come back nice. To it. We'll come back to it. Just yeah. leave the board set up. Yeah. no. But the other thing is, like, there's this point that – so one of the dudes, the big bald guy who's the crime lord but used to be a spy master for Radovid.
Yeah.
There's this exchange – there's a couple exchanges that him and Geralt have where he's basically like, so – what's with you being a crime lord now?
Yeah,
you're a spy master. And they end up just having this weird professional, like, look, you just, it's a gig.
Yeah.
Like, the other thing
we're
went
both,
weird.
We both know what this is like.
Yeah.
You broke my fucking leg or whatever.
Yeah.
Or arm, I forget which it was. and now I'm in this business. Like, we're just, things happen.
Yeah, and, like, it's stuff like that where it's like, okay, these guys still exist at this rarefied level of, like, these are kind of the prime movers of this era. But at the same time, they also are two guys who've, like, been in adjacent lines of
been
work.
Around.
This weird, like, professional courtesy, which I love.
Totally. Well, even for me, the one of the key attractions for The Witcher has always just been the notion of preparation before you go to fight something, which has that feeling of the mundanity of everyday life, of just like, all right, like, this is his job. It is not I draw a sword and fight a thing. It's like, okay, let me look at my book. Okay, right. I need to use necrophage oil. Okay, these are the bombs that work. And that, to me, is part of the fantasy of the everyday in The Witcher, is that
totally.
Even going to fight a dragon is just a thing he does that is part of his
That's
job.
That's his everyday.
Right,
yeah.
And it's treated like that. And in fact, like my favorite conflict in that world has always been like – well, not always, but in The Witcher 3 specifically, the rise of professional witch hunters
yeah.
who like have like if you talk to academics who study this stuff and scholars and historians and stuff, they talk about the professionalization of certain like industries, like where you go from it being like as an odd job guy or like someone who knows
yeah.
like the kind of like local ways to like oh this plant and this plant we'll put this as an apothecary who like makes a salve to like no, you go to school, you become a doctor. You're a pharmacist.
Right.
You're not just like someone who knows what plants make you feel better. We do this the right way. And that movement happening in The Witcher from like, oh no, they're these weird people who live in a castle somewhere far away that like drink weird mutant blood or some bullshit. No, go to school, go to church, carry these weapons. I love that stuff
so
much.
Did you ever play The Witcher 1?
Yeah.
Okay. Like,
I didn't finish it, but I played.
There's this exchange with like the royal woodsman or mm-hmm. monster hunter where that guy gets a different bounty than Geralt does for killing monsters. And so he's like, I'll give you a share of the bounty.
Right.
And Geralt's like, well, how much are you getting paid? And he's like, 60 gold pieces or whatever. And Geralt's like, but you're offering me 25 to go kill this thing for
yeah.
you. And the guy just looks at you and is like, honest wages for honest work.
Right.
Oh.
And it's kind of this fuck you moment.
Yeah.
And Geralt,
I got my master's degree.
Right.
I barely finished high school. Whatever.
Right.
And
yeah,
Geralt just sort of mutters. He's like, you know, we live in this age of miracles. Like, cities are growing. Like, he basically comments, like, things are getting professionalized. They are getting, like, not quite industrialized, but, like, you're definitely starting to see, like, what the economy is starting to ramp up toward, like, a more bourgeoisie, mm-hmm. like, merchant economy. And Geralt's aware of it. He's acutely aware of it.
Yeah.
And people like him are not ever going to be allowed to participate in it.
Right.
And,
right. He's never going to be – which is another – we just talked about The Witcher 3 all day. But, like –
yeah, we could.
the fact that, like, Triss and Dandelion wind up in the big city and, like, oh, yeah, Dandelion starts a bar. Like, that's what he goes off to do. Obviously, he's still involved in the big mystery shit. But, like, no. Like, he's kind of sort of settling down a little bit. Is kind of interesting, like this move from rural, like, you know, almost like Don Quixote style adventurers to like, well, we gotta live in modern times now.
Gotta pay the bills.
Gotta pay the bills. Know? Like, and there are bills to be paid that you can't pay necessarily by walking into a town and being like, what sort of weird witch hag do you got?
Yeah.
what do you got? You got a noon wraith?
Water hag.
What sort? Yeah, you got a water hag or a noon wraith? Which one is? It's a water noon hag. Got it.
Oh, yep. Good.
Those are the worst.
Oh, I gotta do a double.
Oh, buddy, you got. Abducted children back here.
Yeah.
You know you got this going on?
You guys know all your children are gone? Why is no one talking about the missing children? Your husband's a werewolf. I'm sorry. It's the truth.
Hate
you
to break it,
though.
To you, lady. Yeah. But,
this witcher has adopted a very weird accent.
It's
Did
me.
You know Geralt is from Brooklyn?
Witcher. Yeah.
The New York witcher.
The New York witcher. What you got? You got alligators in your sores? Take care of them. No problem.
I'm not sure the New York Witcher is actually going out and slaying anything.
He
sounds like he maybe just complains a lot.
I got a guy. Don't worry about it. Yo, Bill, go in the sores.
He's got a pipe.
He's got a pipe. Get rid of those
alligators.
Don't worry,
that pipe takes care of everything.
Here's the secret. If he eats Bill, the alligators go away. They ate a good meal. I get to collect the bounty anyway.
Everybody's
Forget
happy. Except for that guy, but whatever. Screw it.
Why do I need, like, why do I need six of you guys? Only one of you is doing the work.
It's union dues, you know.
No, I'm supervising. Yeah, if something goes wrong for Bill, Tony and Rico are going down there to help him out.
It's a whole system. Yeah. This is the way it has, the city says, the Bureau says, you got to do it this way.
And Stan's there to make sure we don't hurt any other monsters.
Right. Only Stan has the license to carry a silver sword.
Yeah.
So when he gets down there, no one's looking, gives it to Bill. Bill's better with it. All right, it's a little expertise.
Sometimes you got
to
delegate.
Not so good with the books, are Bill.
Not so good. That's why I'm here. I'm good with the books, if you know what I mean. Yeah? 60 gold turns into 600 real quick. Shout-outs to Brooklyn Witcher.
Waypoint Witcher.
Waypoint Witcher Wednesday.
Williamsburg Witches.
The Williamsburg Witches.
There you go.
All right. I think that's going to do it for us this week.
I guess it does, yes.
And now we have a softball team now.
Yeah, we do. So.
Of course, finally.
Williamsburg Witches.
Williamsburg Witchers.
Yeah.
Thanks to Patrick for joining us. Where can people find you on the internet, Patrick?
Find me at Patrick Klepek.
Rob, thanks for coming to New York and doing one of these live with us.
Thanks for giving me part of a desk.
Well, you can't promise it'll still be there. All three of our chairs could be gone by now. Yeah, it's hard to say.
They probably are, to be honest. Even though we put signs on them that we personalized with illustrations.
Your sign was very polite in a way that was never going to keep anyone
I know.
Away.
I'm too nice.
Was it polite in a way that would kind of make people want to take it?
It said, don't take my chair, please.
Slam you into a locker. Like, that's it. Yeah. Take your chair.
That's what it is.
Slap your books out
that's
of your hands.
That's what it is. And then I take them down into a chokehold and knock them out.
And that's my chair.
That's my chair.
I tried being polite. I'm Danielle.
I tried both ways.
Right.
You know?
Dr. Painlove.
So what I'm hearing is we need to go start giving wedgies out there.
That's right.
All
right. Where can people find you on the internet, Rob?
They can find me at Rob Zachney.
Nice. And you?
At Danielle R.I.
Danielle R.I. Rhode Island. Riendo,
Rhode
Could
Island.
Be anything. Shout outs as always to Dylan and to Tim who make this work on Twitch and on the podcast. You know what? Go to if you listen to this on a podcast situation, go give us a review. It's been a while since I've made that call. I'd really appreciate it. It helps. It helps guide people's ears and eyes to us if that's a thing you're interested in helping with, which you should, because we do all right. We do a good fucking job, actually.
We do all right.
I'm going to say we do a good fucking job here.
All right, over here.
You know. There are other competitors. You want to go to the Witch Hunters, you can go to the Witch Hunters. You want to pay out your ass.
Yeah, fine.
Fine.
You want to pay half that?
Come to me.
Come to us.
I get it done.
Yeah.
I can build one of those.
Look,
I feel like the New York Witcher might be able to help you with your seat situation.
You're right.
Yeah.
We should pay the New York Witcher to get us a seat.
A magical seat.
Whatever sort of seat
you want.
It
never goes away, no matter what.
Perfect. You can find me at Austin_Walker. You can find Tim Barnes, our producer, at TimBarnes451 on Twitter. You can listen to the song Miss You, which is our theme song, at waypoint.zone.
waypoint.zone/Bowen.
That's not it. It's not Zoen. That's what fucked me up. waypoint.zone/Bowen. Shout out to Bowen for letting us use that track. What else do we got going on this week? We're going to have to do something with you, Rob, while you're in town. We're going to try to do a stream. I'd like to do a Stellaris stream. We've been talking about it. You definitely do that if we can find the time to. You're going to shoot some Guide to Games videos while you're in town. I'm excited about that. Patrick, you have to come out, and we should do that the next time you're here, too.
Okay, all right.
Start thinking about games you want to talk about.
Okay.
Spelunky.
Just six Spelunky videos. Six. I'm back to talk about Spelunky again.
All right, everybody. We'll catch you on Wednesday for some streams, and then Friday again for the next episode of Waypoint Radio. Peace.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.